Usher, Socrates poisoned again after 25 centuries. Responses to questions from disciples and press correspondents given in Crete, Greece. Discourse number 26.
These questions are for the International Yearbook and an international weekly newspaper, Weltwoche. Beloved Bhagwan, Switzerland is a rich and beautiful country, but there are so many people suffering for many reasons, and they even enjoy this. Why can't they use their freedom and prosperity to be happy?
Humanity can be divided into two parts. The first is Edith. The second is Messenger. The sadist enjoys torturing others. The messages enjoy torturing himself. This is a very ugly situation. Centuries, we have been cultivating this bliss. The people who are messages have become great saints. Their only quality was their only genius was they tortured themselves. And it was taught and propagated by the religions of the world that to torture oneself is the way to God. There is no logic in it. Because why, if there is any God, he would like his children to torture themselves? Unless he himself is a sadist and enjoys people being tortured by others or by themselves, these philosophies of messages have been predominant. The people who have no other talent, no other creative possibilities, even chose to torture themselves for deep yourself. Bring down new ways of gathering and sleep on a bed of time. Renounce everything that is pleasant. Remain naked when it is too cold. Cover yourself with a blanket when it is too hot. Certainly these people were very inventive. But because it was associated with spirituality, by certain state logic, that the person who tortures himself in this world is passing through a fire test of his trust in God. Jesus belongs to these messages. Mahavira in India belongs to these messages. And thousands of saints were only famous because there was no competitor with them. They were far ahead in torturing themselves in every possible way. People were cutting their genitals. Women were cutting their breasts. And religions were supporting it. Naturally, these people were miserable. But misery became now a kind of investment. You be miserable here, and all the pleasures of paradise will be yours forever. The misery is only for one life. The reward is for eternity. The others who worshipped these messages were steady. They enjoyed people torturing themselves. They worshipped a person more if he tortured more, if he fasted for months. He became a great saint. If he became just a skeleton, millions came to worship him, but their psychological joy was seeing somebody torture himself. And of course, they fitted together very perfectly. the saddest became disciples, followers, and the messages became prophets, messiah, saviors. And they were complementary to each other. And nobody thought that this is a very sick psychology. But religions were becoming prosperous, and people were engaged into this stupid game. They had no energy for any revolution against the politicians. They had no energy against the rich to create a classless society. Their whole mind became centered only on these two things. That schizophrenic mind still remains. It has gone very deep into the unconscious of man. It is not only in spiritual language. It is the same all over the world. People who have all kinds of things, every pleasure is possible for them, and they are free from ordinary mundane work. They can use this time and energy for inner growth, for evolution of consciousness. But no, they are attached to their suffering, or they are attached to suffer, to make miserable other people. Adolf Hitler is a sadist. He killed millions of Jews for no reason at all. Mahatma Gandhi is a Methodist. He tried to create suffering for himself as much as possible. These people are all around. Everywhere these are the two kinds of people. My effort to bring the third kind of human being, which is very difficult. Somebody is enjoying his own suffering, which looks absurd, but deep down he feels that this is the greatest spirituality. There is nothing else to be done. And there are people who are making grounds for others to suffer. They are also thought to be great religious people. I was not aware of it. In America, I received a letter from the president of Nazi Party of America, threatening me that if you don't stop criticizing Adolf Hitler, we are going to sue you in the court. Because it hurts our religious feelings. Perhaps you don't know that Adolf Hitler, according to the letters, was no one but Old Testament prophet Elijah reincarnated. The more I have looked in human beings' minds, I have found some kind of other sickness has been given to you as heritage. Why in Switzerland, when people are prosperous, they are not inquiring about themselves, about the mystery of life? Why they are not entering inward? Why they are not meditating, raising their consciousness to higher living? They are too much attached to their suffering. It is their old faith. And the friendship has gone very deep. It is centuries old. It is a heritage. Moreover, when they are in suffering, in anguish, people sympathize with them. This is to support your sick mind. People never sympathize with you if you are dancing, singing, playing on your guitar, rejoicing life, loving your woman. Nobody comes to sympathize with you. They inform the police. That something has gone wrong. To be blissful is to be wrong. But if you are suffering, if you are sad, miserable, then all the neighbors are so compassionate towards you. Why? Sympathy is a very cunning strategy. The people who are sympathizing with the suffering person are enjoying the fact that they are not suffering. One, second, that you deserve it, and And it is our kindness that we are sympathizing with you. It gives them a great egoistic euphoria. It does not make them jealous of you. But if you are rejoicing and joying, then nobody comes close to you. Because your rejoicing makes them jealous. They are not rejoicing. Your rejoicing does not help their ego. You are higher and they are lower. When you are suffering, you are lower, they are higher. In India, I have one very rich friend. He is also a politician and has been education minister. His only desire is how to become the prime minister. He used to come to me to ask me that I have helped everybody who has come to me, friend or stranger. I have helped the poor. I have opened schools and hospitals. I have helped all my relatives and made them rich, opened factories, shops, presented them. None of my relatives remains poor, even far away relatives. But nobody has any sympathy for me. I said, you don't understand the workings of sympathy. They all hate you. I know few of your relatives and friends whom you have financially supported. They all hate you. For the simple reason, because by your support you have put them down. And you don't accept even a flower from anybody. You are so egoistic. And of course, you are not in any need. And however rich your relatives have become, they are not in any way a comparison to you. But even a small gift from them on your birthday you return. He said, that has been my principal whole life, never to deceive any person. I said, then we should not be worried about their antipathy towards you. If you want their sympathy, it is not by your financial help. If you can take some small thing from them, they will be happy and higher. They have also done something for you. Right now, you are the doers, and they are only poor receivers. He said, perhaps that is the reason they never come to see me. They never rejoice meeting me. They look all sore whenever I meet them. And I can see in their eyes some kind of anger. And I have simply helped them. I said, you have not helped them. You have been simply emphasizing your ego. And nobody can love your ego. Everybody is going to hate your ego. Allow them to do small things for you. They cannot do big things. You are very rich. But even by doing small things, they will feel they can also do something for you. But he said, that is impossible. I cannot let anyone to be in a higher position than me as a giver, and I am a receiver. No. Then I said, you have chosen your suffering, your isolated state, that nobody is a friend to you. You have chosen it. If we study deeply men's workings of mind, the people who are rich in Switzerland or anywhere else, enjoy their suffering. Because that suffering brings sympathy from people, which they cannot purchase by their money. Although sympathy is not love, a very poor substitute, but something is better than nothing. These people have never been loved by anyone. Those who have loved them have loved their money. Those who have been friends to them have been friends because of their money. I was a professor in a university, and in the whole university there was only one man who had a car, one professor. Then I brought another car in the university. That professor has never talked to me. The day I brought the car, he came close to me and said, "Hello." I said, "What is the matter?" This is so strange. I have been here for 3 years and he had never said hello to me. He said, "I have a principle. I make friends only with people who have cars." And so you have to. "Why you have such a principle?" He said, "The trouble is, if you make a friend who does not have a car, sooner or later he is going to ask you, 'Can I borrow your car?'" And I hate, I don't want to give my car to anybody. So I make friends only with people who have cars. They are not going to ask me. I said to the professor, "Then I am not going to be a friend to you. Never again say hello to me. Because you are saying hello to the car. You can say hello to the car. I am no objection. But I am out of the question. I was here for 3 years, you never..." Tried to be introduced to me. "You can say hello to my car, good morning, good evening, whatever you want. I have no objection at all. But as far as I am concerned, I don't want to talk to you again. Your very mind is ugly. Rich people have that problem. People don't make friends with them. It is because of their richness. People don't sympathize with them. It is because of their richness. But these people have never been loved. Even if sometimes somebody has loved them, it was because of richness. And there is such a difference. When you love a person because of his possessions, not because himself, it hurts. It hurts tremendously. So the rich people by and by learn that love is not for them. All that they can get at the most is sympathy. And sympathy is possible only when they are miserable, suffering. Then hundreds of people will be sympathetic to them. Those people will enjoy one thing, that although he has so much money, but he is suffering. We don't have that much money, but we are not suffering. We are still in a higher state of mind than him. There is no harm to sympathize with the person. And the person cannot leave his suffering, because the moment he leaves his suffering, all those sympathizers will be gone. He is caught in a net. And his life has not been a total life. He has only been an earning machine. He has earned enough at the cost of everything that is valuable, at the cost of everything which cannot be purchased by money. You cannot purchase love by money. You cannot purchase truth by money. You cannot purchase beauty by money. You cannot purchase understanding by money. You cannot purchase anything that has real value by money. And he wasted his whole life in earning money, and now he is at his dead end. Money is there, and he is just a balance. His whole life he has learned only one art: how to earn more and more. He has never paid any attention to great music, to great art, to great painting, to great architecture. There was no time. His whole life was devoted one-pointedly. He has only one God, the money. Now the money is there, but he remains a very primitive, barbarous being, uncivilized, uncultured, unsophisticated. I have heard a small story which will help you. Mulla Nasruddin was very rich. It is a Sufi story. He has devoted his whole life in earning money. One friend one day said, "Mulla, you are getting old, but you have never seen a movie." Mulla said, "I don't have any time." But the man said, "I have brought a ticket for you too. You don't have to waste money. Just a little time." Mulla went with him to the movie, and in the movie there is a classical singer. The whole whole movie is around the life of that classical singer. And the Indian classical music is totally different from the West. It is far more scientific. With each alphabet, it has played in different ways, and for 24 hours there are different sounds, different music, to be in tune with nature. In the morning, one kind of music. The sound may be the same, but it will be sung in a different way, with different emphasis. In the evening, the sound may be the same, but it will have a different way of singing. It is a very subtle art. And the man was puzzled who has brought Mulla. That when the classical singer started singing in the early morning, the sun is rising and he is sitting under a tree, play a morning music. And he says, he gives different tones, different emphasis to one alphabet, and Mulla comes. The man asks, what is the matter? I never thought that you are such a lover of classical music. He says, hell with the classical music. This is not classical music, I tell you. I had a goat which did the whole night, and finally died. This man is certain to die. Do something. He had all the money, but only the money. The man was empty. No sensitivity for anything. No understanding for anything. The people you are asking in German have beautiful houses, a beautiful land, all the money that they need, or perhaps more than they need, but they are Ishta. From where their misery is coming. Their misery is coming because they have never learned anything else. and accumulating money. Their being is hollow, empty. From that emptiness their misery is coming. And now they have lived with that misery their whole life. That is their only companion. And that misery is the only thing that they get sympathy for. Nobody sympathizes for their beautiful houses, beautiful cars, beautiful jewelry. Everybody is jealous of all those things, but nobody is jealous of their misery, of their emptiness, of their hollowness. Everybody is sympathetic. And because they have never known love, they think sympathy is love. Sympathy is a false coin. It is not love. And they cannot move higher, as you are asking why they are not using their freedom. For higher values, for higher consciousnesses. They don't have any idea. They are beggars. For those higher values, you have to go through a hierarchy. There are duties of the body. They have never enjoyed duties of the body. There are duties of mind. Listening to great music, reading a great poetry, are duties of the mind. They have never bothered about it. And unless you go from body to mind, you cannot go beyond mind. You will have to pass through the mind. They know only one thing in life, and that is greed. And they have learned only one art how to fulfill the greed. And now they are at the end of their life. It seems too late to begin. And even the idea of beginning will not happen to them. In ancient India, we would be surprised to know that great kings and emperors used to send their sons when they were getting young to great prostitute houses to live there. Because the prostitutes in India and prostitutes outside India have a totally different meaning. The prostitute in India was immensely cultured woman, and even kings had to send their sons to learn manners, to learn art, to learn music, to learn dancing, to learn what beauty is. Once they had come from the prostitute's houses, after 2-3 years of learning there, they were given new teachers, wise people, who can help them to move into the world of the sacred, who can teach them how to be silent, how to be serene. The king was going only to declare his son his successor, and the successor was ready as a wise man, not empty, not miserable, but joyful, rejoicing. Now he was ready, he can be given the whole empire. He knows something better than the empire. He may lie if there comes a time to lose the empire, but not the beautiful experiences that he has gained about truth, beauty, love. Those are far more valuable. This was a maxim that unless you know something better than the empire, you cannot become a real emperor. Unless you are somewhat higher than the empire, then you are not worthy to be an emperor. But in a capitalist world, that was the feudal world, things have changed. You have to earn money, and you have to earn fast because life is small and competition is hard. And in earning money, you forget that there is much more to life than money. Money is nothing. It is a good means of exchange. But more than that, it has no value, no spiritual value. Somebody has to bring the point to the rich people of Switzerland that you are not rich, that you are utterly poor. They have to be made aware that they have lost themselves and found money. They have sold themselves and gathered gems. Unless a rich man realizes his emptiness, there is no way for him to start working to gain things that he has missed in his life. And it is never too late, because it is only a question of understanding. If he can see his poverty, he knows how to destroy the physical poverty. Now the same art and the same intensity and the same totality is needed to destroy the inner poverty. And he will become for the first time really rich, overflowingly rich. Then there will be no suffering, no misery. Then for the first time he will be not sick, but healthy and whole. Of course, one thing he will miss, people will not sympathize. In fact, people will become jealous of him. People will even start condemning him, criticizing him. But nothing matters. The opinion of the people carry no weight when you have found your inner treasure. You are so self-contented that even if the whole world condemns you, you can still smile and laugh. You can still sing and dance. Switzerland misses a religious revolution. One of the most beautiful countries, one of the most nice people, and yet no flowering of consciousness. Perhaps they are even afraid of anybody pointing to their emptiness. For 2 months I have been waiting for a tourist visa to go to Switzerland. And my people are there who are trying hard and the Swiss government has given a telegram to the ambassador here. Keep cool. I don't understand why they are afraid of me. Perhaps an unconscious fear that I am going to point to their inner poverty, that I am going to point to their inner ugliness. Everything is beautiful outside. But what about your inner consciousness? And the message from the government to the ambassador, keep cool, can mean that just don't act. This may take years, keeping cool has no time limit. And particularly for Swiss people. Who are accustomed of being cold, they can keep cool as long as you want their whole life. But I am coming from a hot country. I can't keep cool. I love Switzerland. And if there is no visa, then my love will be the visa. I will enter.
Book one. Politics, defense systems, and even daily life are based on a balance of forces. I give you something, and you will give me something in return. This balance works, but leads to quite a danger, especially when defense is concerned. What is your point of view?
is true. That life functions on a principle of balance. I give you something not for nothing. You have to give something in return. In fact, I'll give you something which is not profitable to me, and I'll get something from you which is more profitable to me. You give me something which is not profitable to you, and you get from me something which is profitable to you. Both parties should be earning in the exchange. That's how the whole economic, the whole structure of society runs. It is pure business. Teacher was talking about Jesus Christ for almost 1 hour, and then she asked the children, who is the biggest man in the history, the greatest man? An American boy raised his hand and said, Abraham Lincoln. The teacher was shocked a little. After 1 hour telling them the greatness of Jesus, his miracles and everything, but still she said, your answer is good, but not good enough. The second boy raised his hand. He was an Indian. He said, Mahatma Gandhi. The teacher was even shocked more. The things are going farther away from Jesus Christ. He said, your answer is also good, but not good enough. Then a third small kid raised his hand. He asked, she told him, yes, what is your idea of the greatest man in the world? The boy was a Jew, so the teacher was afraid that Jesus Christ seems to have no place. But the boy said, Jesus Christ. This was even more shocking. Because there was a beautiful, a are wise, a gold medal for the right answer. The gold medal went to the little boy. When everybody had gone, he kept him there and asked him, "Are not you a Jew?" He said, "I am a Jew." Then what? You said Jesus Christ. He said business is business. In the heart of my heart, I know Moses is the greatest man in the world. But that is a question of the heart. This is a question of business. In the world of business, this principle of balance goes on working. Everybody profits by it. But in times of war, things are different. Times of war, armor, an exchange of goods. It is not, I give you something and you give me something. It is a question of either or. Either I have everything or you have everything. Either I am the winner or you are the winner. Either I will be dead or you will be dead. The ordinary system of balance breaks down. In the war, it is not a question of balance. It is a question of victory. That war has been preventing human progress on each step. It disrupts all ordinary principles that function perfectly. It destroys all balance of life. It creates chaos. In 3,000 years, there have been 5,000 wars. It seems we have been continuously fighting, somewhere or other. And it is simply destructive. It has no values for life. It is in the service of death, not in the service of life. And now we are faced with a third world war. This is simply idiotic. It is not even a war. it has broken even the principles of war. The principle of war is either I win or you win. The Third World War has brought destructive forces to a point where nobody wins. Nobody is defeated. Everybody is destroyed. If the Third World War happens, that will show only that humanity has been living for thousands of years an insane life. This is the culmination of centuries of madness. It was okay once in a while, sometimes in Vietnam, sometimes in Korea, sometimes in the Middle East. People go mad, but the whole world remains. Doing its business, everything goes on smoothly. But the Third World War is not going to be local. It is going to be total. Everybody, not only man, all the animals, all the birds, all the trees, all that is living will be involved. So if man decides for that war, that will be simply nothing but insanity. The Third World War is a good point to drop all wars as such. And instead of putting so much energy into wars, put the energy in creating a better man. Creating a better society, creating a new humanity.
Bhagwan, yesterday you said your religion always changes, and that love is religion. Please tell me how religion and love change.
Change is the fundamental principle of life. Anything that does not change is dead. That should be the criteria. Change means movement, change means growth, change means evolution. And in life there is never anything perfect, because perfection again will be death. To be perfect means now there is no more anything to happen. All has happened. Perfection means you have only past and no future. In life, everything is imperfect. And it is beautiful that it is imperfect. It means there is future. There is an opening. Things can be different. Things can be better. You can be creative. Life is not one-dimensional either. You may have known one dimension of life. Don't be satisfied so soon. There are many more dimensions waiting to be explored. And there is no end to exploration. There will always be more dimensions waiting to be explored. We are living in an inexhaustible universe. According to the basic principle of change, religion changes. Takes more and more loving human attitude. For example, you look at the bear. The Jewish God says, I'm not nice. I'm not your uncle. I'm a very jealous God. Now, even a Jew will not agree with the definition of God. Not nice, jealous, those things don't fit. But when the Old Testament must have been written, that was the attitude of people. There is no God. People simply project their own attitudes. They were not nice. They were jealous. They were angry. And it was natural for them. Because Moses has brought them from Egypt out of slavery. You cannot expect a slave to be nice. Nice for what? Life gives him slavery. He is beaten every day. Just look at the pyramids in Egypt. Even scientists are worried that how those great stones have been managed to reach to the very top. Cranes were not in existence. Human beings were carrying those stones. Thousands of people died creating a single pyramid. They were not treated like human beings. One died, he was thrown by the side of the road, and another Jew was forced in his place. Every day hundreds of people were dying just to create a stupid pyramid which make no sense. A small grave would have done for the great kings and the queens of Egypt. These people were hungry, beaten, sick, old. Do you think them to be nice? Do you expect them not to be angry? Not to be jealous of all those who are in power? It was a projection. Jesus changed the definition of God. He said, God is love. He could do it. Now Jews were settled. Life was no more a slavery. They were no more treated like cattle, with no value, with no human dignity. It was possible to project God as love. I say today, even that definition has to be changed. So when you say God is love, it simply shows one attribute of God. He may be having many other attributes. Love is only one of the attributes. He may be wisdom. He may be creator. He can be many other things other than love. Love is only an attribute. I have changed. I say love is God. When I say love is God, it is a very radical change. In fact, I am saying there is no God. Love is all that you have. Love is only the God. There is no other God. I have disposed God too. Jesus disposed of jealousy, anger, but he kept the idea of God. I say to you, love is enough unto itself. Love is the only creativity in existence. And there is no need for any other God. This is the way religion changes. And when I say love also changes, then you have to look into the love. A small children also love. We call it baby love. They are simply loving. The first fluttering of their wings. They have not yet opened their wings into the sky. They are still in the nest, fluttering, getting ready. And young people love. But their love is more biological than really love. It is hormonal. A few hormones are taken from your beloved, your love will disappear. A few hormones are added to your beloved, your love will disappear. It is the attraction between hormones. It is chemical. Young people love, but they do not know. Higher peaks of love. They love the other person, that there is something in the other person which attracts them almost like gravitation. That's why the phrase falling in love. Why not rising in love? It is a fall. Because it is not something conscious. No lover can say why he loves a certain woman or a certain man. He can simply say that I don't know, but I feel tremendously attracted. That attraction is biological, chemical, hormonal. have been moved through more seasons. Will become more seasons. Old people also love. Now the hormones are gone. The biological pull is gone. But something new has entered in life. For the first time they feel without the lover or the beloved, they are too lonely. Now this is a new experience. Love has taken a new shape. They want the other because otherwise they are so lonely in such a cold existence. They need the warmth of the other, the presence of the other. This is to forget their loneliness. But this too is dependent. And real love, pure love, can only be out of independence. That happens only when you have become so meditative that you don't experience loneliness at all. On the contrary, your loneliness has changed into a beautiful experience of aloneness. Remember the difference between two words. They are not synonymous. I'm not bothered about the dictionary. I'm talking about existence, real experience. Loneliness is missing the other. Aloneness is finding oneself. Out of aloneness, a totally new kind of love arises. Now there is no need, no chemistry, no biology, no psychological loneliness. You are completely full in yourself. There is no need. Love is no more a need. No, love is only a blissfulness. It is gone beyond the world of need. When you need a person, you are dependent on the person. And when you are dependent on the person, you are angry at the person. Two persons who have reached to aloneness can be in immense loving space. but there is no dependence, no anger, no conflict. And this love is no more a relationship either. This love is a state of being. When one is alone, sufficient unto himself, he radiates love. It is not addressed to anybody in particular. It is just like the perfume of a rose. It is not addressed to somebody's nostrils. Everybody is invited. Whoever is capable, receptive, is not suffering from cold, can enjoy the fragrance. Love goes on changing its color. Finally, it becomes only a state of love. No more a relationship. Then too there are changes. The change never stops. This state of love in the beginning is only for human beings. Soon it starts having in its area animal, birds, trees, all that is alive. It goes on growing. Soon the ocean, the rivers, the mountains will be part of it. A moment comes when your love fills the whole universe, and the universe is continuously expanding. First it was thought that the universe is static. Last 50 years research about the stars has changed the whole idea. They are all spreading out. Just like a bud opens its petals and goes on spreading its petals, the universe is opening. Scientists think there is no end to this opening. It will go on opening, and the speed is really fast, the way it is opening. All these stars are going farther and farther away. With the speed of light, and the speed of light is the ultimate speed. Light moves in 1 second 186,000 miles. Per second, the universe is expanding 186,000 miles. And it has been going on expanding for eternity. And it is going to expand for eternity. Your love will go on expanding with the universe. Soon you will disappear, and there will be only love expanding. Death will also not be an static, fixed state. There is only one thing that never changes, and that is change. Otherwise, everything changes. Change is life.
Bhagwan, I feel very grateful towards you. Since I took sannyas, my life has changed and I have started to enjoy myself. But there is still the doer in me. I would like to produce more beautiful books, especially on you. It is still difficult for me to combine business and meditation. Can you please comment on this?
Don't try to combine. Let business be business and meditation be meditation. So one day you will wake up immensely overjoyed that they have mixed. You cannot do it. You can only wait. You have to be just patient. Go on doing your business. Go on doing your meditation. And don't even expect when it is going to happen. It will happen whenever the time is right. Then they start overlapping each other. Soon they get mixed up. Then your business becomes your meditation. Your meditation becomes your business. And that is the time when people really start laughing at you. Because they cannot conceive business and meditation making one. They are one in me. I was for 9 years teaching in the university. And this was the problem that finally I had to resign. Because my teaching became more and more meditative. it became more and more deeper, less and less concerned with the examination, syllabus, and my vice chancellor became worried. He said, I have been to your class. It is beautiful to listen to you. You have put your whole heart into dead words and they have again become alive. But this is a university and these students have to appear in the examination. They will be at a loss. They will not know what to write. They are enjoying you as they have never enjoyed any other teacher. I had only 10 students, but my class, the vice chancellor has to give me a special permission for a bigger class, because 200 students were attending who were not my students. And other teachers were angry because this should be in their classes and they were in my class. And then they said to me that this is not right. I said, you don't be bothered, you can also come. And in fact, few teachers started coming. When complaints reached to the vice chancellor, I invited him that you can come. If you find any fault, you tell me. He said, there is no fault. As far as you are concerned, everything is perfectly good. The trouble is with us that the syllabus has to be completed. But the examination is coming close. The students have to be prepared for it. You have taken the burden of their mind, the tension of their mind. They are so relaxed and so much enjoying the moment. Then who is going to give the examination? I said, these people will give better examinations than anybody else. They need not prepare. They have listened so attentively, so meditatively. And I have put myself totally into whatever I have been teaching. He said, I agree on every point, but the problem is papers will be set by some other university. Papers will be examined by some other university professors, and they know nothing about you. And these poor students will be unnecessarily harmed. I said, if this is the case, then I resign. Then whole universe becomes my university. then wherever I am, I will do my business. The moment will come when business and meditation will become one. Right now you want to write books on me and you feel worried because the doer is there. Don't be worried. It starts with the doer. Perhaps while writing on me, the doer at some point will disappear. But it cannot be dropped by you. Get absorbed totally in writing the book. In the beginning you will feel it is the doer who is beginning. Let the doer begin it. People commit suicide. The doer is committing suicide by writing on me. Let him commit suicide. But you don't think too much of it. Use it while he is alive. Use it. Perhaps by the introduction is finished, he will be gone. And he will be so absorbed in writing, so deeply involved, that you will forget that you are there. Neither the doer will be there, nor the writer will be there. And then writing happens. And that has a beauty of its own.
Bhagwan, the last question. When I read Glimpses of a Golden Childhood, I enjoyed you as a very courageous child. I always had difficulties to find enough courage to live my own life. Is courage a quality one inherits?
Everybody inherits every quality that man is capable of. But it remains in potential if you don't make effort to actualize it. In my village, there was a beautiful river. And I had found the highest hillock to jump from there into the river. And I will take other students with me. And just looking down, they will start trembling. And I will say, you just see me if I can jump. You can also jump. There's no problem in it. You have the potential courage, just you have never used it. You have never given it a chance. It was really high. I will jump, then somebody else will gather courage and jump. and then others will see that we are still alive in the liver. Finally, all my friends were able to jump from the cliff. Then I said, no, this cliff is useless. We should go to the railway bridge that passes over the river. That is the highest point we can find. But they said, that is too much. We will not even allow you to jump. And moreover, there is always a guard with a gun, because people commit suicide from there. And since few people have committed suicide, the government has posted a permanent guard 24 hours. I said, you don't be worried. I have talked to the guard. And he is willing. He says, if you are not committing suicide, just practicing jumping into the river. He said, in fact, I also always wanted to jump standing from here. It is so challenging. But I don't have the courage. I said, you are a great soldier. We are small students. Seeing us, perhaps you may get the courage. He said, you bring your friends. So one day I went with two of my friends. All the way they were telling that don't take that risk, it is too high. And I said, first I will jump. Then the guard will jump. That is the arrangement. And when you see that we both are alive, you can decide whether to use your courage or not. The guard was almost trembling. He said, have you really come? What do you mean, really come? He said, I was thinking that you are simply talking. I said, this is the arrangement. First, I will jump. You can see that I am alive. Then you have to jump. Because these are all smart people. And you should give them courage. He said, my God, number two, I am number two. I was thinking I will be the last. He said, no, that will be insulting you. You are a great soldier with a gun. Put the gun aside. I jump. The guard will try to jump. He will come to the close and suddenly some breath and he will stop. And I was calling him from the river that you need to stop. It takes only a second, just don't stop. Finally, after 3-4 attempts, he managed, because all the boys were laughing. I was calling. And I had made him a great soldier, so he was also worried about his prestige. Finally he jumped, and when he fell into the river, he said to me, "Maharaj, I managed. I cannot believe that I am alive." You believe it. You are alive. Just pinch yourself. You are not dead. He pinched himself. He was afraid perhaps he is dead. And seeing us both alive, slowly, slowly, one by one, students started jumping. Everybody has the courage. Everybody has all the talents that man is capable of. Just to what talent you bring into the world depends on you. Nobody is born with any particular talent. That is an old idea invented by powers, invented by people who were nobodies in life, who they thought that these are inherited qualities. Somebody becomes a poet, somebody becomes a painter, somebody becomes a warrior. My own experience is totally different, and I want it to be understood clearly that everybody has all human talents in it. Now, which talent you feed, nourish, support, will become actualized. And when it becomes actualized, then you become a great painter, naturally. Anybody who wants to become a painter will think that perhaps it is not in my inheritance. It is not intrinsic to me, because I cannot make such a beautiful painting. One of the great musicians was asked once, because in India, classical music has to be practiced almost 8 hours every day. Even those who are world famous, they continue to practice. This great musician was asked, "If you don't practice one day, what will happen?" He said, "If I don't practice one day, I will feel the difference." The questioner asked, "If you don't practice 2 days, then," he said, "the critic will feel the difference." And the questioner asked, "If you don't practice 3 days, he said, "then everybody will start feeling the difference." Every talent needs to be nourished continuously. And remember, nobody is born a poet or a soldier or a painter or a mystic. Everybody is born with all the qualities, potentialities. you have to choose what you want to become and bring that potential to its flowering. Certainly you will have to water it with your blood. You will have to put your whole being into it. Then it becomes alive. I am against the old concept that somebody is a born poet, somebody is a born singer, nothing. Everybody has the capacity to become anybody he wants. Just it depends on your decision.